Season 5, Episode 4, The Truth Is Out There. It starts out with a dead dude on the street. They say he looks like a street junkie. And he's got a couple bullets to the chest. And Sipowicz comments that he looks like he was beaten with a bag full of doorknobs.
Whatever that means.
He's got a receipt in his pocket for John Bradford. They don't really have much to go on other than he looks absolutely terrible. An older woman comes down from the fire escape, shouting to the detectives. And she is a slight famous face. I knew I recognized her from somewhere, and I didn't know exactly where. It turns out she's in the... Her name's Kathleen Doyle. She's in the 90s movie Body Snatchers, which is a remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I've only seen it because at one point I watched all of the movies based on Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and that one was one of them.
How many movies are there based off of Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Well, I believe there's four. There's Invasion of the Body Snatchers in the 50s. Then there's Invasion of the Body Snatchers in the 70s. Then there's Body Snatchers in the 90s. And then there's a movie called The Invasion in the mid-2000s with Daniel Craig and Nicole Kidman. And that one is terrible. The others are all right. Body Snatchers wasn't very good, but it had like Forrest Whitaker and a couple other people that made it interesting. But that's neither here nor there. Kathleen Doyle is playing Cynthia Trumbull, who is a very paranoid woman who's, you know, a little crazy. But she gives a good account on what happens. She says that a gentleman dragged the DOA out of the bar the back way, up the stairs, up to the roof, and threw him off. But the woman is slow to trust the police and has a problem with all of the electricity and the people recording her.
That they're giving off, right?
Yeah, she was hard to understand. It was about electricity and pooled electricity and people trying to read her thoughts. And they said, why don't you stay with a relative if you don't feel safe? And she said, well, the outlets are bad at her nephew's place, and gives a reason why she couldn't. You know, they roll with it. Sipowicz does this occasionally in episodes where he rolls with the person's crazy to get the information.
It's definitely, it's weird, like, what he is okay with and what he, or what he, like, gives his time to. And then, like, sometimes he, like, has no patience. Like, for this woman, I feel like he may have just been a good day, because I feel like on another day he could have, like, snapped at her and not talked to her, you know? And thought she was just crazy.
It reminds me of, I forgot the guy's name, but when the guy who came in who, like, doesn't really have, he doesn't really say a lot of words. He only said, like, mama and wanna and whoop.
Yeah.
And he figures out an entire case off of just that guy by talking to him. He takes the time with folks that, you know, may need a little more help or folks that have some mental issues. But he really uses this woman because she doesn't believe that they're actual cops. She thought that they were, like, death investigators, like, morgue dudes. That's the only reason she talked to him, and they didn't correct her in any way.
Because I think she only thinks that cops are in uniform.
Only.
She must. Like, she must not know that there are, like, plainclothes detectives and shit.
So they get all this info out of her, and they, like, thank her, and then she goes back up to her place, and that's just the beginning of the episode right there. Just talking to her and getting all the info. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. Martinez gets a guy coming in because there's no PAA, because Gina is out still. She's having baby trouble. The guy who comes in is Trevor. I don't know why I need to say his name, because he only has one scene. But comes in because his cab was held up. He noticed that a brown car was following him all night, and then took all of his money at the end of the night. And says that he was a gypsy driver because he had an accent. And then he proceeds to say, yeah, man, in his thick Jamaican accent.
I thought that was kind of funny.
That was a pretty good written joke for, you know, just the diversity of New York City. Also made me think about Cool Runnings, which is now on Disney Plus.
It makes me think of Chet Hayes at the Academy Awards.
Just to get that story out of the way, the only interesting thing about this is one of the famous faces inside the Martinez cab story.
Uh-huh.
And the truth is out there is a reference to the Spacey woman. So the cab one isn't really the main focus. Martinez checks out on the gas station where the cab driver stopped at and said that there was a brown car that could have been a gypsy cab and was given the license plate. The next scene after that, because the car is in the name of Ravine Benjean? Bonji?
Yeah, Ravine.
That was played by Rajit Chahardi? Chardahi? Anyway, Rajit Chahardi, he's a famous face. He was Vikram on The Office.
Oh! He just is way thinner.
Yeah. He is Vikram from The Office.
I couldn't place him. Oh, I love Vikram.
Vikram was the shit on The Office. He was a part of Michael's dream team when he started the Michael Scott Paper Company. And he left after a day.
Vikram, best salesman I know.
He comes in and he says, like, look, I understand there was an accident involving my car. I have to work. If I have a bad license, how would I know? I'm sorry. I have a family. I have to work. He's very apologetic and scared. And they ask him who would be using his car at the time of the robbery. And he says his brother, Kumar, which, you know, I guess that's a pretty stereotypical name, but they used it. He says Kumar probably did it. He lies. He admits that Kumar has a gun.
Uh-huh.
He's scared of his neighborhood. And
he just throws him under the bus, like, right away.
Well, to be fair, the dude's been stealing his car.
Yeah, and I mean, he's fucking with his livelihood, but...
Because when they said, like, this could jam you up with your car, he's like, I could lose my car? Like, that was, like, he's justified, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, that's your brother, though.
It's, because we're not... So what you're saying, Kirk,
that if you were, like, going through something, right?
Okay.
And...
Now, here we go. Like, here we go. Everybody strap in.
You were struggling with something personal, and then you came to me, and then something happens, and the police come to me. You'd say that you'd want me to rat you out instead of, like, maybe not getting you in trouble and then dealing with it personally?
What is the thing, though?
I don't know, whatever Kumar was dealing with. Maybe he couldn't get enough White Castle. I don't know.
Well, Kumar wasn't looking for White Castle. He was robbing people with a gun that could have killed them.
Because he wanted some White Castle.
Ravine mentions that Kumar was borrowing money and stealing, and he stole in their home country. And Ravine spent the money to get him to America for the opportunity. So... I think it's a different thing because Kumar is literally only in this country because of Ravine, and then he takes that gift and says, cool, that's great. I'm going to rob people with a gun using your car and possibly jam you up. And Kumar was given the opportunity in the next scene to tell them what was going on because they bring him in, and they go a little hard on Kumar, but he acts like an ass. Because they were like, hey, so did you take out the car? Yeah, went to Times Square, did some taxiing. And he's like, so you weren't over here where this thing happened? He goes, no, I didn't need gas. He's like, I didn't ask if you needed gas, and I asked if you went over there.
And I like when they have quick comebacks like that.
Yeah, because they're trying to get him off his toes. They're trying to get him frustrated and flustered.
Like, the one they always use or gets used a lot is, what were you doing last night? I was at the movies. What'd you see?
Yeah, I was watching TV. Well, what'd you watch?
Yeah, they use that one real quick.
Oh, who are you with? And be like, oh, I don't remember her name. It's like, oh, yeah. Really? How important are they then? Kind of, yeah. So Kumar then could have explained, because Kumar is putting his brother into a situation. It'd be different if Kumar was doing something to himself, and it was his deal. But Kumar is jamming Ravine up. And all Ravine did was tell the truth, which is, he probably took it, I don't know what he's up to, here's where you can find him, by the way, he'll probably lie to you.
Yeah, that's true. He is, like, he's fucking with the Ravine's, like, life.
It would have been different if, because Ravine doesn't know anything, it'd be different if Ravine was like, oh yeah, it's totally my brother, he totally did this, you should go get him, you should get him right now. He was like, look, yeah, he did do stuff like this before, he does have a gun.
Yeah, it's probably him again.
So it wasn't him ratting him out, it was him going like, yeah, I could see how he would do this.
You kind of ratted him out.
After that, Kumar ends up getting shot.
Yeah, they get a call that Kumar's been shot at his apartment.
So they go to see him, and when they get there, Kumar is, like, shot in, like, the face. I don't know if he got grazed or whatever.
Yeah, it's always weird when they talk about, like, people getting shot in the face in these shows, and then they get there and they got, it's like, he's grazed, you know? It's like, well, he really didn't get shot in the face then. Like, it grazed him.
Yeah, and Ravine, because he doesn't know anything about, you know, gunshot wounds, he just assumes, oh my god, I shot my brother and I killed him. He left.
So he bitches out and, like, fucking goes to the park randomly.
He runs to the park with his gun. Kumar's classy-ass girlfriend, I don't remember her name, but just remember she's kind of a bitch, to the police when her boyfriend's just been shot.
Yeah, well, she's a straight douche to, like, the police officers, because they're like, you know, this guy's, like, having a rough time, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, well, this is rough for Kumar. It's like, bitch, fucking, his brother got him here. His brother not only paid for him to get here, he's also going through the same shit that Kumar's going through. I don't know, I just felt like she was kind of, like, I don't know, just being a bitch.
Yeah, she was being quite the bitch about it. But
words.
She said that, like, basically he came over to confront him about it. He grabbed the gun to take it from him, and they got into a shoving match, and then the gun went off, and he left with the gun. And what she said is, like, man, Kumar's gotta adjust.
Yeah, like, she, like, said some weird shit like that.
Where it's, 'cause she said, I had to move from, like, another town in the East Coast. He had to move from another country. He's gotta adjust. It's like, okay, but that doesn't mean stealing and jeopardizing your brother's chance to stay in the country.
Yeah, you know how many people are immigrants that have to adjust and it doesn't involve, like,
crime?
Robbing and thieving?
They get a call from uniforms that there's a guy in the park who is threatening to kill himself. And there's a really tense scene where Ravine is on a park bench and Martinez and Medavoy go out to see him. And he has the gun to his head, and he's talking like, I've brought shame on my family, my brother brings shame, and now I bring shame. And during that scene, they have all these guns pointed on him, and he, at one point, points the gun at Martinez, and I was like, okay, so he would have died.
Oh yeah, right away.
He would have been dead. Like, yeah. The second the gun is pointed at another officer, donezo.
Yeah.
Especially with how covered he was.
Yeah. In, like, any normal situation, I feel like he would have been shot and killed, like, as soon as he walked into the park with that gun. Like, I don't see them giving him a long time to walk through that park with that gun. It's just me personally, but
I mean, that's the end of that story, because he eventually gets up to Ravine.
And that's the end of that one.
Well, he gets to Ravine.
Well, after Martinez's riveting speech, he gets him to give the gun back and come in.
And then they sit with him on the bench and try to comfort him before he gets tackled.
Where's he from again? India?
Yes, he's from India, from what I can tell.
Oh, I thought he said he was from Pakistan.
I honestly don't remember. I don't remember them saying a country, but I thought it was India. Maybe I'm completely wrong.
You wouldn't, because you're a single white male and you don't pay attention to cultures and shit, so.
That's right, I don't pay attention to cultures.
And shit.
Oh, anyway, Simone and Sibwood's story. They run what they got for fancy, saying that the witness is a bit of a head case.
Is it Looney Tunes?
They say that the bar downstairs that she mentioned was closed when they got there, so obviously the guy closed up after the incident happened. So they say they're going to bring in the owner of the bar to talk to him about what happened. And they start talking about Pop Goes the Weasel. It's a runner throughout the episode. Don't really get why, but Sipowicz is trying to figure out what the meaning of Pop Goes the Weasel is, because he sang it to his son Theo, and he doesn't understand what he's singing.
Yeah, and it never pays off.
It doesn't at all. But
it doesn't tie into anything, and I don't think they get an answer.
No, they don't. They literally get a definitive, there is no answer. Because the person that brings them that no answer, Naomi Reynolds, who is the PAA for the time being, shows up.
Naomi Reynolds.
Who, I don't know if anybody will agree with me on this. When I first saw her face, I was like, is this a European model? And then that weird accent came out of her, and I was all confused.
What were you confused about?
Well, because I just don't think that the voice matched the face at all.
Oh, not at all, especially with that red hair. But then, like, I mean, there's got to be people in Texas who have, like, red hair, you know what I mean?
Because, yeah, she's straight up like, hi, I'm Naomi Reynolds. Also, Naomi's a kind of a weird word. I don't know of a lot of...
weird word?
Well, a weird name for, like, red state.
It's just a weird word.
Well, she shows up late because she got robbed on the subway. She runs that story for Fancy, explaining why she was late. And then it turns out she's actually well-versed in all the work she has to do, and just starts going at it, and helping people out, and putting the files away. And then...
yeah, she comes in ready to go.
She comes in hot. She's ready for that job. She meets Howard Edgar at the door, and brings him to Simone in the coffee room, who she hasn't even met yet. So she meets Simone and Sipowicz, saying that she's the PAA for a while. And they talk to Howard Edgar, who is the bartender of the bar that closed up.
Yeah, she comes in right away, and, like, she has a weird, like, the whole conversation with Fancy's a little weird. But then, like, she snaps out of it and just starts taking care of business.
And I don't know if I just read into it wrong, but it looks like Fancy kind of gives a face like, shit, okay, Naomi, down. Like, I didn't expect you to be 0 to 100 so fast, but... okay, I guess.
Yeah, but I think she was trying to make up for
being late.
Yeah, even though it wasn't her fault, she was still trying to make up for being late.
When they talk to the bartender, he is tight-lipped about the whole situation because he's actually scared of the guy who did this. He says he doesn't know who the dude is that probably committed the crime, but he does know the guy he was talking to. It was a guy who runs numbers, who's a bit of an a-hole, basically. Says, you know, guy who runs the numbers but never pays you out. A guy named Steve Richards, who is a continuing character in NYPD Blue. He has been here before.
Yeah, he's an informant. He's one of my favorite informants.
He got, like, a $20,000 reward for information that led to the rescue of some kidnappee that I can't remember.
Yeah, right. It was, like, a rich guy.
And because they found him alive, he got, like, 20 grand. What's his middle name? It's, like, Stephen something Richards, but I can't
remember. Stephen Ronald Richards.
Stephen Ronald Richards.
Yeah, dude. He's the best.
He's like, yeah, it's Stephen Richards. And Sipowicz is surprised because he knows who Stephen Richards is. And when the bartender gets up to bounce, he asks him about Pop Goes the Weasel, and the bartender was like, look, man, I gave you all the information I know. I guess he thought that was a threat for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I guess that was a joke. The next scene involving them, Stephen Ronald Richards comes in, and, you know, he's fast talking, and they go to talk to him in the break room. There's a very funny moment where he mentions no more Donna and points at Fancy, and then he points at Fancy's office like, oh, wow, he got demoted from the fucking lieutenant to the guy at the welcome desk, which is hilarious. And they bring him in, and they ask if he was at the bar, and he's a little tight-lipped about it. He's dancing around, and he admits that he does bookmaking, but he thinks, he's like, are you going to jam me up for that? He's like, maybe not. We want to know who you were talking to today. And he kind of, you know, dances around it, but it was a guy named Bear, whose real name is Francis Donahue.
Uh-huh.
Who wholesales coke.
I really like the character choices that the dude makes to play Stephen Ronald Richards.
Yeah, he's definitely a full character.
Yeah, and I think that's why they kept bringing him back, or they kept writing him in more and more. Like, he's the best. He's the best. I think he's the second best informant.
Yeah, he's really funny, and he's really put together. He's a famous face, obviously. He's been in other things. His name is Paul Ben Victor. He was on The Wire. He's been in Tombstone. He's been in little stuff here and there. But yeah, he kills it as this dude. He's a perfect sleazeball, because he even asks about money on this one. Yeah. Even though he admits to, like, committing crimes.
But that's his character, though. He's always trying to make a deal.
And then they ask him about Pop Goes the Weasel.
Always trying to make a buck. Yeah, they keep asking about this fucking Pop Goes the Weasel thing.
And then he, like, sits at the door and asks another question, and they just close the door on his face, which was pretty great.
Yeah.
The next scene with them, they go to pick up Bear on a BS lineup story, saying that there was a rape, which is misleading him, I guess you could say.
They do that a lot, and I don't think that's... Can they do that, you know what I mean?
I guess so. They say it violates your probation to refuse to help out an investigation, which I don't know how accurate that is either.
I guess with probation, okay.
But they did lie to him about why they wanted to do the lineup, because he has to agree to do a lineup. But I guess you can lie about why you're doing the lineup? I don't know. These are questions.
Or they can say that wasn't helpful, so he feels like he has to do the lineup, you know? I don't know.
The weirdest part of it is after he says yes and then they bring him in, it actually explains later in the episode why it happens, but a guy that was playing pool with a ponytail, like, quickly sits next to the guy that he was sitting next to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way the scene ends is, like, he, like, quickly sits down and starts talking to him, and I'm like, okay, what's up with ponytail's ass? But it makes sense as the episode ends. The next scene is the lineup where they got the Spacey Cynthia, who... Mm-hmm. She will only do the lineup if they meet her conditions, which is to turn off the equipment and, like, turn off the stuff that'll scan brains and shit. I didn't write any of it down, but it's very specifically weird stuff. And in the lineup, she gives up Bear and starts freaking out, saying she's gonna have to move. Now they're gonna find her wherever she goes through the electricity.
Doesn't she think she sees him?
Well, no.
Doesn't she think that he sees through the glass?
I don't know if it's as much of that as or it's... He will find her no matter what.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Because I don't think she reacts like, oh my gosh, he can see me. I think once she picks him out, she's like, oh my gosh, he's going to come find me. They're going to come find me. At one point, Cynthia said something that I completely agree with that was a hilarious quote, which is, I don't believe any large company. And I was like, well, that's just a piece of truth. As they get done with the lineup, where they confirm, they notice that there's a lawyer waiting for Bear... And they don't want them to get together too quickly, and they don't want the lawyer to notice that the witness that just picked him out is crazy.
Or walking by.
So Sipowicz and Simone take her to the fishes, so the lawyer doesn't talk to her. Naomi says something like, fancy something something, and then she gets dressed down by Fancy, saying, refer to me as Lieutenant, hopefully to distract the lawyer, and then he talks to the lawyer directly about the situation that he's being held... Or he's going to be arrested. When he gets through the process, then you can talk to him. But they're trying to keep her away from him. And then Cynthia starts to freak out next to the fishes. And you were talking earlier about how Sipowicz, like, takes the time. And he distracts her with Pop Goes the Weasel.
Yeah.
I think that's supposed to be the payoff, I think. Is that he gets her to start singing Pop Goes the Weasel.
I guess if there is a payoff, I guess that's it, right?
Because they sing it as they go around the whole office, because the office is like a big square. So as they're doing a lap around the office, they're singing it, and then Sipowicz is like, okay, but what happens to the weasel? And she goes, he pops!
Yeah. You're a fucking weirdo.
Because she sings the whole thing, which I didn't even know that there were that many, like, verses to Pop Goes the Weasel. And she breaks down the whole thing, and Sipowicz is like, but what happens to the weasel? And she just, he pops! Like, Sipowicz is crazy.
Yeah, like Sipowicz isn't getting it.
The next scene is when shit, like, I don't know, after this, it seems like the rest of the episode is, like, fast-forwarded. I don't know if you agree with me. Because the next scene, Sipowicz and Simone go to pick up Cynthia, and she's been, kidnapped?
Mm-hmm.
And the scene right after that, like, no going to the office, they go immediately to Bear. And they ask him about what happened to the witness. And he seems to not know what's going on, even though Sipowicz is, like, getting ready to beat him in the cell.
Mm-hmm.
And they make one of the cellmates sing Pop Goes the Weasel.
Yeah, over and over and over.
Then the scene after that just immediately cuts to the lawyer, where they roll in, catch him doing coke... And this scene was really cool and super sly, how when they open the door, how they check the stalls to see if anybody else is in there before they just straight up slam on this lawyer. I rewatched it twice when I did the first watch, how it was so smooth, where it was like, check the doors, nobody's here, slam, up against the wall. They catch him with coke, so they're going to charge him with coke.
Yeah, they're going to go at him. They want to take away everything from him.
And what's really weird is they catch him doing coke, and they're about to put him in handcuffs, and he, like, begs them to not do it. And they said, fine, you remember that we brought you in like a gentleman. And when they have the interrogation, they bring in Cohen to do some lawyer talk. So they can do some lawyer talk to each other.
Well, Cohen's pissed because, well, the dude's, like, going against everything that lawyers are supposed to be, and I think that pisses off Cohen. And I think it also pissed off Cohen that he... Because Cohen also feels used, you know?
You think Cohen feels used?
Yeah, by the lawyer, I think.
Well, you might have to elaborate. Like, well, what you're saying makes sense when I explain what he says to him, or what he does with him. Because...
Explain it.
Because Cohen and this lawyer start talking. Sipowicz and Simone technically have him on the cocaine, which the lawyer says, well, it's an illegal search. And Cohen reminds him, hey, even if it's an illegal search, you had cocaine on you, so you're going to be disbarred. Or at least you're going to have to talk with the bar about what happened. We just want information on where this woman is because we assume you know something. The lawyer then says, I don't want to be implicated in the crime. I want immunity from the crime. And Cohen says, I can't grant you anything because my office doesn't even know you're here, because if they did, you'd already be in trouble. He kind of tentatively agrees, hey, we're not going to get you in trouble if you tell us what's going on. So the lawyer gives up the cronies and says, Bear's homies took the woman to a safe house where Bear used to stash drugs. That's what I'm confused on. Why does Cohen feel used then? Or are you talking about...
Maybe not used. I just think he feels that, like, the dude is disrespecting, like, what a lawyer's supposed to be.
Maybe. I can see that. That's what I think. Because they then do a raid where they're wearing the full gear. They're wearing the vests and the jackets. If it was in slow-mo, it'd be a normal NYPD Blue action scene. They raid the safe house, and they find Ponytail Dude and the dude that was talking with Bear at the bar. And they find her in the room, and she's freaking out. She's like, I'm having a heart attack. This place is a pool of electricity. At one point, she puts her arm on Sipowicz and says, carry me. So they carry this woman downstairs, even though she definitely does not have actually having a heart attack.
She's hamming it up, man.
When they bring in the guys, the dudes that kidnapped her, obviously, Simone is with Ponytail Guy, and Sipowicz is with the smaller guy. And Simone, he gets the dude to admit that Bear put him up to this, because he's like, you can get a skate for the entire thing by just admitting, obviously, Bear murdered this guy and asked you to do it. And then the little guy with Sipowicz pisses his pants because Sipowicz threatens him and scares the shit out of him. And the little guy just straight up tells him, the lawyer is the one that put everybody up to this, and said Bear would appreciate it if this woman couldn't make it to trial. So then, after the guys basically will write down that Bear had him do this, Sipowicz has a run-in with Cohen. There's a lot going on in this scene, and I think I'm going to talk about it way too much, but it's going to happen.
Okay.
Sipowicz sees Cohen and says, are you still going to let the lawyer skate? Because it's clear the lawyer's the one who set it all up. And Cohen says, I thought we assumed he set it up. I gave him that information so we can get the woman back safe. Which, to his credit, that is something they do occasionally. They let a bad guy, they let a criminal skate on something, so they can get the person back safe if a person's life is in danger.
I think that's what they did originally with Stephen Richards. They
were basically
going to get him for something, but then he ended up ratting out somebody else or helping them with something else, and so they didn't originally charge him for what they were going to.
Then Sipowicz basically says, well, he's a piece of shit. You're a piece of shit if you let this piece of shit... continue being a piece of shit. And Cohen reacts very angrily, which he should, because he's like, what the fuck? You asked me to help you with this, and I did, and the woman is safe. I thought that's what you wanted my help on. Now I can't break my trust with this guy, because then I'm an asshole. But if I help him, I'm then an asshole because I only help out my own? And Sipowicz says, yeah, tie everything in a convenient knot. But that is exactly what Sipowicz is doing. Was like, hey, use your connection as lawyers to get the information, but then don't use your connection as lawyers to actually follow through with what you say.
Yeah, Sipowicz is being unfair to Cohen.
And Sipowicz is just doing that thing where he lashes out when something is not just, but it had to happen a certain way to get someone back safe. It ends with Cohen storming off in a huff. Jill showed up, and as we know, Jill and Cohen are fuck buddies. So,
yeah, they're getting down and dirty.
So Cohen leaves to the break room, and Jill says something really fucked up that bothers me a lot. Because Jill is still relatively new to the crew. And the last episode, she was rolling her eyes at Medavoy, which is kind of like, okay, we all roll our eyes at Medavoy. He's kind of annoying. Then she goes up to Cohen, and Cohen's like, oh, do you want to be the first detective on 4-1s to call me an asshole? And he's like, I don't think you're an asshole. She's like, it's Sipowicz. He sees you, you're young, you're attractive, and you're smart. And on Sipowicz's best day, he might think he's smart. And I want to be like, yo, bitch. Sipowicz is a very good fucking detective.
He is what you wish you could be when it comes to this job.
And maybe she's just saying that to make Cohen feel better. Still not cool. And maybe it's and maybe it's just like being a fan of Sipowicz that bothers me. But when she did it, I was like, yeah, you can go fuck yourself. Like,
no, it's still not cool either, because like that's your team. Like, you need to be more on their side than Cohen's side. You have to work with Sipowicz all the time.
And there was a part where Cohen said, well, they need to redo those parts of the training where they say that our office and your offices are supposed to work together. And it's like, we are supposed to work together. The friction comes from Sipowicz is a little hard to work with, and we all kind of accept that as a part of his genius, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was just fucked up that Jill was like, yeah, you know what? It's because you're just awesome and he's just a piece of shit. When it's like, no, he's not a piece of shit. You shouldn't have said that, even if that's what he wants to hear. Then there's just a reminder that they're boning. Right before that happened, Russell came in with the news that the woman is fine and she has the heart of a horse.
Yeah, like nothing happened at all. When the first time I watched it, I had a feeling nothing had happened to that woman. And she just was, like, hamming it up and wanted to be carried down the stairs.
Well, she's mentally ill, so she thought she was freaking out. She's probably having an anxiety attack and assumed it was a heart attack. But I understand kind of what you mean. I don't think she was sitting there going, man, I want someone to carry me down the stairs. Like, I think she was genuinely freaking out. But because the way you said, like, hamming it up and wanting to be carried makes it sound like she's just, like, attention-seeking bitch, but...
No, I get what you're saying.
When I was like, no, she's, I think... Because she doesn't seem malicious in any way. She just seems really scared and paranoid about everything.
Yeah, everything.
Naomi, who, this was her first day, she got dressed down by Fancy, and later she, as Fancy's leaving, she's like, I'm sorry for being informal, and Fancy's like, oh, I should have explained, I'm sorry, I only did that to try and to distract from the lawyer. And she's like, man, nothing in New York is as it appears. Sipowicz. And then Sipowicz goes, yeah, same thing in New Jersey, too. And she then goes to Sipowicz and is like, I called the New York library, and apparently there is no answer on what happens to the weasel. And he was like, oh, okay.
She comes out of nowhere with that shit. Maybe that's the whole thing. Like, maybe that's the whole thing about it. Like, there's no
answer.
Maybe there's just no answer to why things happen or why the monkey's chasing the weasel. I don't know.
Or what Pop Goes the Weasel's about. But the episode ends weird because then Sipowicz and Simone go to check on their guys that are confessing. And when they do, they have a little talk about how some mysteries just don't solve. And then they keep looking at Naomi and they're like, I guess she likes the job. But the episode ends where, like, they look at her, then look at each other, and then go back into the room, and then just cuts to black.
Yeah.
With, like, weird music, and almost, like, the romantic NYPD Blue music, so it was an odd ending. A very odd ending.
The last couple of episodes have been kind of weird.
In terms of ending, or just period?
Just, like, some of the acting's been, like, way over the top, like, some of the shots have been weird, Like, there's been, like, longer lingering shots in some of these episodes, you know. But, I mean, they've been good episodes. There's been some weird stuff happening.
They're experimenting now that they're in season 5 and they know, like, we're not going to get canceled tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe they're trying a bunch of shit, you know.
They're pushing the boundaries to see what they're allowed to get away with. Anything else about this episode before we close it up?
I really like the crazy lady. I think she does a good job.
I thought so, too. I thought she really brought the heat.
She brings the heat.
She brings that straight heat. And Stephen Ronald Richards, very funny. And
always a great character.
Comes in and kills it. And what's weird is I watched this episode once on Amazon and once on Hulu. And Amazon has the previously on NYPD Blues, so they give you context for Steve Richards, which is like, if you start listening to our podcast in season 5, and just Steven Richards shows up and you have no context, he's still cool.
Yeah.
Like, he's still a cool character, but it does help to know, like, oh, he was a dick. Like, he was a bit of an asshole for a couple episodes before he showed up here.
Yeah, it does help to know, like, who, like, his backstory. It does help.
And the previously on NYPD Blues, we'll give you some of that. Anyway, every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and where you find your podcasts. We're on Instagram at AsherBrothersPodcast and on Twitter at AsherBrosPod. It's mostly when new episodes come out, but if you want to talk about the episodes, I'm on there talking. Anyway, have a good one. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show. That's how it gets seen by more people, well, heard by more people, and then hopefully they listen to the show, but then more importantly than that, watch NYPD Blue, the best show ever. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, you can check out True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons from creators and consultants. You can check out What Would Sipowicz Do?, a collection of articles written about the show. You could check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, on Amazon for 99 cents. There's tons of stuff out there. It is currently on Amazon and Hulu. The whole series is there for your binging pleasure. You don't have to wait for us to get to the episode. You could watch the whole thing yourself. If you have any interest in the things I'm doing other than this podcast, you can always check out Kirk Has Glasses on any platform you could think of. If I'm there, that's my name, Kirk Has Glasses. I'm putting stuff up all the time on Twitch, Instagram, all that nonsense. Have a good one. Be good to yourself. Watch more NYPD Blue. Peace.